Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. Your host today is Cheryl Gehring.
Hi, everyone. This is Cheryl Gehring back for another great show. My favorite shows are about environmental issues and people who are actually making things better in our desert. And today I have my speaker is Mike Aglio. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Cheryl. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I'm glad I have you on the show because you have a lot to offer. And first of all, the big thing I think we want everyone to know is that you have opened a new native plant nursery.
That's correct, yes. Our nursery is High Desert Native Plants, and we are located at 4200 Donovan, right next to the Keystone Heritage Park in El Paso Desert Botanical Gardens.
Mm-hmm. And that's over there. If you're coming down and you normally take something to the Citizen Collection site, it's between Sunland Park and over there by Sunset, but it's more closer to Sunland Park, easy to find, and you also have a banner out there.
Yeah, we have a big white and green banner that says Nursery Now Open. You can't miss it.
And you just had a grand opening, didn't you?
We've actually sort of had two grand openings, which is a funny story.
Go ahead and tell us.
We did a grand opening back in September in conjunction with Keystone Heritage Park annual fundraiser event in the fall. And then we closed up shop for the winter because we had just gotten started. And we had our true grand opening on March 1st of this year. And that was a great day. And we're going to be open now from now on.
Tell us your hours.
The nursery is open on Wednesday through Saturday from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. And then also on Sundays from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And we take Mondays and Tuesdays off.
Okay. And do you have a phone number that if people want to get a hold of you about the times there?
Sure do. 915-490-8601 is the phone number.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a website that's slightly under construction right now, but it is highdesertnativeplants.com. And our contact information is there as well.
Very good. Well, Mike, how did you get started with reclamation and natives?
Oh, that's an exciting story.
I know. That's why I want you to tell it.
Well, I grew up on the mountain on the northeast side of town, and I was real lucky that I had the desert for my backyard. And so just as a child, I grew up hiking around the mountains and just sort of fell in love with the desert to begin with. I had wanted a career in marine biology, and I was excited to get out of town when I was in college.
Marine biology. 180 degrees.
Yeah, it was a big flip.
I'll say.
I was going to discover the Loch Ness Monster. That was my goal.
Well, it was once a sea here, wasn't it?
Yeah, one time. If you look in the right places, you can find the fossils of the marine invertebrates.
And maybe even a Loch Ness Monster.
I haven't found that yet. But then as I was at UTEP, I took an ecology class with Dr. McKay, and we did a lot of work out in the desert and just kind of re-fell in love with the desert again.
Mm-hmm.
And really started appreciating it. And then I've just made El Paso my home and the place for my career and all of that. So,
where did you get your education?
I have a bachelor's and a master's degree in biology with a focus in ecology from UTEP.
Wow, that's nice. Oh, from UTEP.
Yeah,
very
from UTEP.
Good.
Because
I know that you had that. And so when you started out after college, did you start right away into reclamation projects?
No. So in college, I did a lot of work doing research, ecological research. And then after that, I got a job with a large kind of a global engineering and environmental firm, and I worked there for almost 10 years.
Wow.
And we did biological consulting, but I did a whole bunch of other stuff as well. And in the early 2000s, I read a report about cactus poaching, if you will. And
here in Texas?
Here in Texas, and the massive exflux, if you will, of plants leaving West Texas and headed for other states further west where they actually have plant protection laws.
And that's true. We have no plant protection laws, do we?
No, not really. And they're working on putting some together, but it's a bill that keeps failing as it goes through the Texas legislature.
So basically, when you see the truck with that big trailer full of yuccas and ocotillo going through I-10 on the way to Arizona and California, they're just taking our cactus and our yuccas away from Texas to other places.
That's correct. And you know, it's an industry that is in some ways is not necessarily ecologically sustainable, but there's nothing in place to prevent that type of activity. So these people certainly aren't breaking any laws.
No. At this time.
but
moral laws they're breaking.
Well, and so a lot of the people that I worked for were developers locally. And
yes.
I thought, geez, these guys are scraping the land to make room for new houses, and all of these plants that are being exported are mm-hmm. being scraped away anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked a couple of them if they would be willing to let me collect the plants before they scrape the land, and they agreed.
Wow.
And so great partners I'd like to give a hand to is Stanley Job. He lets us collect plants from the quarry quite a bit.
Yes.
And so we use those plants then in reclamation projects, and we sell them in the nursery. And I think it works out pretty well. Unfortunately, so many plants, so little time.
Well, I bet. And I know, though, I'm glad you mentioned that, Mike, because we want people to know that it's better to buy from a reputable source than some guy in a pickup truck that's going through the neighborhood trying to sell plants that he might have just taken off of our Franklin Mountains.
What's funny is folks see our banner up there for Nursery Now Open, and they see High Desert Native Plants, and those guys in those pickup trucks come to me and they ask if we would like to buy some of the plants.
Of course. It's worth a try.
Well, and I like to ask them, where did you get those plants? And you know, invariably they're out there in areas that we don't have permission to be in or where we haven't asked.
Well, good. I'm glad that you made everybody aware of that, because that's a terrible thing that's going on. And we hope that there'll be legislation soon.
Yeah, I've actually supported that legislation too. And
yes.
It should be done the right
way.
But
I like the way you went out and just worked with the developers, and they worked with you.
Yeah, they're a good group of guys generally willing to help out.
So did you have a surplus of plants, and that's what made you think about starting a nursery?
I've always sort of wanted a nursery, and the idea after I quit my day job, so to speak, at the engineering firm was to open a plant nursery selling only salvaged plants. That's a hard way to make a living.
Yeah.
And so I went back into doing reclamation work and started doing biological consulting, and then doing the contracting work for restoration projects for federal, state, and local government and private clients.
Okay.
So that's pretty exciting work.
And tell me some of the ones that you've been working on lately.
Well, we have a couple of big restoration projects going on right now, one here in El Paso with the Keystone Heritage Park. We've been working there since 2012. The late, great Kevin Von Finger was my client there, and he hired us to plant trees and wetland plants and do some earth work and rainwater harvesting to enhance the wetlands and the bird habitat there. And so we continue to work there, and that's a very exciting project. Another project that we have going is the Las Cruces Dam.
Yes, up there on I-25?
Yes, ma'am. Right? It's about a 3-mile-long dam that runs parallel to I-25, and the Army Corps of Engineers partnered with the city of Las Cruces to build a wetland pond, a wet meadow, and install actually almost 100,000 plants across the dam to enhance the habitat up there. And so we're actually growing those plants from seed up in Las Cruces at our greenhouses in Las Cruces, and then planting them in there.
Do they need any kind of irrigation to get them started, or you plant them at the right time of year, or how do you do that?
There's a combination of techniques that we use. There are a bunch of plants that we're putting in out there that are going in non-irrigated, And so the best bet is to plant them during the fall or the early spring, and when the evapotranspiration stress is minimized.
Mm-hmm.
And then we give the ground a really good soak before we put the plant in the ground. We mm-hmm. put the plant in the ground, and then we walk away, and we'll come back maybe a month later and water it again.
Wow.
But these are natives, and they're adapted to this type of habitat, so they tend to take off pretty well. And in fact, usually when we put a fresh green plant out there, the rabbits are the first to find it.
It's like dinner time.
Yeah, it's like we're putting the salad bar out there for them.
Yeah, that's how it was at the zoo also.
Yeah.
We would put out new plants in the animal exhibits, and then they would say, Cheryl, come and look at the animals eating up all your plants. That's going to be – so you must work in some kind of percentage you're going to lose.
Yes.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
It's always part of the – that's part of the equation.
Now, you've also done other projects in the past in California and Arizona.
Yeah, we work from Texas all the way over to California. One of my first reclamation projects when I started my company in 2007 was a former coworker. He had started his own company too, and he was doing work at Edwards Air Force Base, and they were building a new residential subdivision on the Air Force Base. And so we went in and collected the plants, creosote bush actually.
Wow.
Off of that residential subdivision, and then transplanted them onto a BLM site, a Bureau of Land Management site, which was located east of the base where they were doing reclamation work.
Mm-hmm.
So we transplanted creosote bush, and we did about 110 shrubs. We had about 30% survival with the way we were transplanting these shrubs. But my client there said that that was by far the best success he had ever had, even from nursery-grown creosote bush and a couple of other methods.
Well, I remember once you told me this story, and were you trying to also, there was road beds that weren't supposed to be there, or was that in Arizona?
Yeah, that was also in California. What we tried to do is close off the roads, and the technique we use is just by putting in some large plants right in the on the first, say, 50 yards of a
mm-hmm.
road.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is that kind of breaks up the visual line of there even being a presence of a road. And when people can't really see the road from their pickup truck, they're inclined not to go
on
down there. Yeah.
Because this was places where they had been off-road traffic. And after a while, that causes a gully and then an arroyo.
Yeah, and you get into some bad erosion problems with that kind of stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, how did you make sure those had water, or how did you do some ponding, or how did you do that?
We used a product that's it's water that's bound up in a gel,
mm-hmm.
and we'll water the plant in really good, and then we'll put these little packs of water that
do they look like a quart of milk?
They do. They're like
mm-hmm.
it's a quart sized packet, and when you open it up, it looks like your antiperspirant gel.
That's exactly what it looks like.
And you drop that in the ground, and it lasts a month or two, and it slowly releases water to the plant. And depending on the size of the plant and the evapotranspiration needs of the plant, you put in between 4 and 8.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually established cottonwood trees on some areas using about 30 of those packs.
Wow.
And putting them in concentric rings around the plant and,
mm-hmm.
Making it a big deal so that the roots go reaching for them.
Wow, that is great, because I do know that those particular things were used also in Fort Bliss when they were planting some of their areas in near the on the new area, the new city that's out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were using that too. That was interesting. So I got to see those for the first time. You know, you keep saying evapotranspiration.
That's the buzzword of the day.
Yeah, and what does that mean?
Well, one of the definitions of a desert is where evapotranspiration exceeds precipitation.
Right, and I'll tell you, I'm an irrigator for the state of Texas, and in our little classes we have to take for our CEUs, they say that 11 inches of water is taken out of the ground by sun and wind in El Paso before we put one drop back into the soil, being that is the worst month of the whole year.
Which month is that?
June.
Yeah.
So, in fact, we are so dry because of that. Most of Texas, past the Pecos, have to use these little shutoff valves to shut off the water to your sprinkler system when you get any water or rain. But they exempted us.
Yeah, because the evapotranspiration stress is so high.
So you're right. So you're saying that you are then battling uphill and trying to get these plants established.
Right, exactly. And the plants are adapted for it. That's why a lot of native plants have small leaves. And
that's right, yes.
Yeah, like, for example, mesquite trees, instead of having one big leaf like an oak tree or a maple tree, that one big leaf has adapted down into hundreds of little itty-bitty tiny leaves. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the mechanisms for saving water. Another way that these plants have adapted is they have hairy leaves, and sometimes that gives the plant a silvery appearance. And those hairs tend to prevent water loss from the plant's leaf tissue. And then cactus, of course, are the best ones.
Yes.
you'll notice on cactus, the ones that have grown out in the bright open sun tend to have a thicker cover of spines, because the spines actually shade the stem of the plant and prevent water loss.
I'll tell you what, gardening around here isn't for sissies, is it?
That's right. One of the, we salvage a lot of cactus in Ocotillo, and when people see the big barrel cactus that we have in the nursery, one of the first things they always ask is, how do you handle those things?
Yeah. You know, that's something you ought to tell the audience. How do you get those out of the pot?
Ah.
There you go.
And the obvious answer is very carefully. So Harbor Freight sells welding gloves, 3 packs. For $9, real cheap. We go through a lot of those.
Uh-huh.
Heavy duty leather welding gloves. The Cactus Club guys use stout pitchforks. We use those stout pitchforks for moving plants around.
But underneath them.
Underneath them.
Not in them.
Not in them.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, we can't sell a plant that's got a bunch of pitchfork holes in it.
Very good. Wow.
And then newspaper and cardboard are your friends there too.
Yes. Yeah. Or just maybe pushing it out of the pot and rolling it guiding it into the hole.
You can do that. You risk breaking spines when you do that.
Yeah.
But that's definitely an option. And another option is if you have an old scrap piece of carpet.
Oh, that's a good
idea. A lot of times that carpet works really well.
Or an old rug.
Yeah. Carpet or an old rug. And then, we use hose and rope and whatever's laying around to make lassos and sling mm-hmm. things around mm-hmm. too. So, mm-hmm.
Wow. So what did you do in Arizona?
In Arizona recently, we did a small project for the Bureau of Land Management. And it was an experimental project that a gal from the BLM office in Safford had put together. And it was in conjunction with a school group out there. And we had 70 middle school, high school, and early college students out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out there with our seeding machine. We have a seed imprinter that we tow with our tractor.
Okay, now what does that mean? You have to explain to these. We're newbies.
Okay, so the seed imprinter that we use is a 6-foot-wide steel roller that has these big angle iron cleats that rolls over the surface of the soil
mm-hmm.
and basically creates a waffle pattern in the surface of the soil. And it deposits seeds in that waffle pattern. And when the wind blows and the rain comes, the rain is collected in those little divots of the waffle pattern. And then when the wind comes, it blows the seed into the bottom and blows the sand over. And so water and seed and vegetative litter and things that seeds need to germinate and survive are all collected down at the bottom of these divots.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty good cost-effective way to do revegetation work mm-hmm. on a large scale. But
I'll
it's
tell
a
you.
Timely process.
Yeah, I was going to say it's timely, and it sounds like it's a whole different set of tools.
Yes.
In order to do that. Otherwise, all that seed would blow back over here to El Paso.
Well, that day in Arizona actually was a tremendous. The winds were just blowing like crazy, and it was awful.
I hate those
I don't
kind
know
of
if
days.
Anything actually lasted after that.
Well, somewhere it went.
It went somewhere, and the kids were real troopers. We were out there with the tractors, and we would drive by, and all this dust would get picked up, and the kids would all just get sandblasted by all this dust. But they were dropping mulch on top of on top of the soil after we had gone through and done the imprinting, they were using gravel and pecan branch. They were using branches from pecan trees and kind of mulching over the surface to...
in order to keep it from drying out in between waterings.
Yeah, and to prevent, even further, to prevent the wind erosion and stuff.
Yes. Well, you know, now that you've told us how hard it is to reclaim the desert, I mean, it's not an easy project. It's something that you have to come in and bring certain kind of tools and have certain kind of knowledge. Well, as you have heard, we're going to have the river shut off this year again.
That's right.
And we've had xeriscaping around for a long time. A lot of people misnomed that as xeriscaping.
And I know, that's so unfortunate.
Yes, because it always reminds me of a yucca and some white rock and a kidney-shaped planter, but or nothing at all. But xeri means dry, so that's really what it's supposed to mean. But, you know, we've had that now. It's not a new concept anymore. It's been around for, since 1985?
Yeah, xeriscaping has been around for a long time. And just as you mentioned, I think that it's poorly interpreted sometimes. And you get these these unfortunate landscapes that are a yard that has a blanket of quarried rock.
Right.
And a few sad yuccas. And
yes,
and a prickly pear cactus that catches a Walmart bag as it flies by.
The Bandera de El Paso. Well, you know, it's funny when I think of those jokes. You know, you're from El Paso or New Mexico when you think 8 tons of rock makes a nice yard.
Right.
Or the other one, using your turn signal in New Mexico or El Paso is a sign of weakness.
That's a good one. Yeah.
But you were kind of telling me before the show that there's some new ways to start looking at doing your yard without the rock, because you know we've all enjoyed the rock in our yards, but unfortunately it's really damaging our mountain, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Quarried rock is a non-renewable resource. It requires dynamite and blasting out the rocks and yeah, we've reserved spaces in our mountains for that purpose, and as we continue to grow, we'll continue to need those materials. But what we're trying to do at our nursery and with the stuff that we design and install and with the plants that we sell is trying to let people know that the notion of xeriscaping goes far beyond a blanket of Franklin Red Rock and a couple of yuccas.
Mm-hmm.
There are a great variety of wonderful plants that bloom in all different colors throughout the year and attract hummingbirds and butterflies and all these wonderful things. And you can put them in your yard and they will be low maintenance and they will be beautiful. And you don't have to have just plain rock and a cactus that you never water.
And also, as the water utility has been trying to tell us, that try to cover at least 50% of your yard with some shade or plant material.
That's right. You know, trees go a long way to making the whole environment cooler.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And as we know, you may be saving money on water, but you're going to have one heck of an electric bill, aren't you?
That's
trying
right.
to keep that house with that reflected heat.
That's right.
And so what kind of plants would you suggest for our audience that they could use to shade their yards that you have at your nursery?
Oh, geez. It depends. There's a whole bunch of things. People come in and they say, we like a shade tree for the yard. And mm-hmm. so the series of questions begins.
Yes, it does.
What side of town do you live on? Are you in the mountain? Are you in the valley? Are the houses close together? Do we have a lot of room for the tree? All of these types of questions. My two favorites, and these are just two of my very favorites, and they're kind of old standbys, but is the Texas honey mesquite and the desert willow.
That's mine, too.
They're performers, and they're beautiful trees.
Mm-hmm.
We have in our nursery the Texas honey mesquite variety Maverick mesquite, which is a thornless variety, and it has a little bit of a greener trunk.
Isn't that great?
They're a really cool tree, and they grow quickly, and they're good water savers.
Yeah, and then of course you get the flowers with the desert willow. What's your favorite variety of desert willow?
Oh, probably the Warren Jones.
Do you know? I like the Bubba
myself.
Because even though, despite it being created in Texas A&M, that's why it got that name.
We can live with that.
I don't know if I can. I'm from California. But anyway. But that's great. And then people are always asking me, I want something that's evergreen and blooms and is drought resistant. Yeah, and that's what I do too. He just made a face, and I always look at him too like that's something that we all want. I feel like telling him plastic or silk flowers.
Yeah, you might have to consider relocating.
Well, one that comes to mind that I really like is the Arizona rosewood or the Chiso rosewood.
Arizona rosewood is a beautiful plant. Actually, another one that I've been pushing a lot is Rus Oveda.
Oh, yeah. The sugar bush or the sugar sumac.
Sumac, that's right.
Right.
And then there's also evergreen sumac, which I think is a great native alternative to oleander.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and it's beautiful white blooms all throughout the summer, and it can be a large plant that makes a nice shield or screening plant.
So you don't have to watch your neighbors. But also what I like about it is, and many of us who like native plants are also interested in birds and animals, it makes great shelter for them too.
That's right. It makes good shelter and it's good for honeybees.
Right. Well, once again, I think that we need to give out your phone number and your email address so that everyone can get a hold of you if they have all those 15 million homeowner questions.
We're there, happy to answer them. Miguel Lopez is our nursery manager.
Yes, he's great.
Very knowledgeable guy. Again, the phone number is 915-490-8601. The name is High Desert Native Plants. And you can reach me via email at Mike, M-I-K-E, at highdesertnativeplants.com. And that's also the name of our website.
And pretty soon, probably the website is going to be you're just tweaking it right now, right, to get it ready.
That's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. With all the new things that you've been doing.
Hoping to roll out a new website later on this summer.
Mm-hmm. And also, I wanted you to mention that you're going to be a speaker at the Native Plant Conference. We're going to be actually hosting the Native Plant Society here in El Paso. We'll be hosting the State of New Mexico Native Plant Conference over at Canutillo High School. And that's going to be July 31st, August 1st, and August 2nd. And you're going to be there, Mike, to speak. I think it's on either August 1st or August 2nd.
I'm speaking on August 2nd.
Good. I'm glad you know.
Of course, now that I've said that out loud, I have to
go back and check the calendar.
That's
all right. Just come to all of it, and then you'll see him.
I'm really excited about the Native Plant Society of New Mexico hosting their meeting here in El Paso. And yes, I am speaking. And then I'm also hosting a tour of some of the wetlands restoration work that we've done out there at Keystone Heritage Park on Sunday.
Very good.
Yeah.
And also, if people want to come out on a Saturday or Sunday to visit Keystone Botanical Gardens out there, they could call you ahead of time and see if you're giving a tour.
That's right. I'm usually around, and I'm happy to walk people through and talk to them about birds and rainwater harvesting and plants and
butterflies,
all of these wonderful things that we have. Yeah.
Very good, because I know that I'm looking forward to going to the dam site myself and see what kind of habitat you've created over there. And I'm really glad that New Mexico seems to be a little bit more progressive.
Yeah, well, it's cool because the Corps of Engineers is looking at some similar projects here in El Paso.
Oh, good.
And keep our fingers crossed that they come down here and work on some of our wetlands down in the lower valley.
That would be good.
That would be really, really cool.
Closer to the bosque, our bosque down there.
Yes.
Very good. Well, thank you very much for coming in and letting everybody know about your new nursery.
Well, thank you very much, Cheryl, for giving me the opportunity to come in here and talk about it.
Well, anytime, and we'll have you back.
I look forward to it.
Thank you.
This episode of El Paso Primetime was recorded on March 13th, 2014, and is available on our website at ktep.org. You can email the show through ktep@utep.edu. We'll see you next time for another edition of El Paso Primetime.